This is a production of Cornell University.
Hi everyone, I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. Guys, I'm back. Feel free to filter in, grab food, and find a seat. So this will be our meeting Monday, November 17th of the Graduate Student Assembly. First, as always, we'll begin with a roll call of the voting members. Actually, one thing I want to say about this roll call for voting members. If you're a voting member, it is important that you are attendance at these meetings, and we do keep note of attendance for voting members and field representatives, particularly for voting members. If in the minutes it shows you are absent, please let us know so we can make that correction. And if you come in after the roll call is called. And I'll make another note of this in open forum for those people who do come in after roll call is normally called. So, from Physical Sciences, Jeffrey Bergfock.
I saw him. He was here.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the rest of us are... Humanities, Jesse?
Here.
Christy?
Here.
Christine? From Social Sciences, William?
Here.
Todd?
Here.
Lynn?
Here.
Professional Schools, John?
Here.
Alexander?
Here.
Biological Sciences, Cora?
Here.
Anne?
Here.
Ian?
Here.
For Masters, Ashley? And Erwin? So, next will be approval of the minutes from our last meeting. Are there any corrections for the minutes? Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
We'll vote by universal acclaim, I think it's termed. Are there any objections? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Unanimous consent. There we go. All right. Then we'll move right along into our presentations. The first one we have is from Rebecca Robbins from the Student Mental Health and Wellness Committee to give us an update. Is she here? Not, I can give my presentation.
What about the site plan?
Okay, so we'll give her a couple more minutes, I guess. I think we're a bit earlier than the time we told her to give us an update. So I'll go right into the update on the Ivy Plus Summit. So the Ivy Plus Summit is a gathering of all the graduate professional student leaders from the 8 Ivy League schools and MIT, hence the term Ivy Plus. It's just sort of a venue for us all to get together, collaborate on issues which affect graduate students nationwide, not just at our own individual campuses, share ideas on organizational structure between our various organizations, and it's a great networking opportunity for, you know, meeting with these other student leaders of other campuses, kind of get to know your peers sort of thing. And, so that's kind of the general purpose of the Ivy Plus Summit, which is held annually, rotating amongst the different schools. So some common issues that came up at this past Ivy Summit that I would share. Housing, this was a concern of pretty much all of the Ivies, especially ones in the larger cities. Columbia, as I'm sure you can imagine, has very severe housing issues where their stipend is not adequate to cover the housing costs, and that's just because the housing costs in Manhattan are astronomically high. So they're trying to work with the administration to pressure them to offer more on-campus housing options, better subsidies for off-campus housing, things like that. Mental health was a big topic, how to promote better mental health and wellness amongst graduate students and how to deal with mental health issues. I'm happy to say that Cornell seems a bit ahead of the curve on this one. In other schools, it is apparently a common practice to limit the number of sessions you're allowed to have with a counselor, which I thought was rather surprising. And that was a common across all of the other schools there. Transportation, MIT recently redid their bus routes. So this was a graduate student-led effort to compile the heat map of where graduate students actually live in and around MIT. And then they plotted the routes of the buses, and they found that the routes didn't actually match up with where students were living. So they petitioned the university with this information. And I'm going to hide this. They petitioned the university with this information, and the university was... actually worked with local transportation to make a new route or just adjusted existing ones to better match need, and they actually saw a huge increase in utilization. And so it actually seems that it was quite successful. So it's a model that we're hoping to bring back here to Cornell. We're working with a couple different committees to see about trying to get this off the ground, because it's kind of a common concern that the TCAT doesn't really address our own needs as graduate professional students. Teaching was another big issue. The people at Harvard did a bunch of surveys. Harvard's graduate student government, not the professional student side, but the graduate student government has lots of survey tools that they use regularly. And so they did a survey on teaching, and they found that many graduate students felt that they simply had too many students to deal with, and so, or not deal, but, you know, our workload as teaching assistants goes up with the number of students that we have, obviously. So they felt that they were past sort of a critical limit of how many students that they could have and still be effective teachers. And also in terms of the workload on the number of hours per week, and so they're trying to push Harvard to either restructure the number of hours they pay graduate students for, because they currently are paid expecting something like 40 to 50 hours a week per work, which is not realistic given the current teaching structure, or just reduce the number of students per TA. I brought this up because teaching is, you know, many of us here are TAs, and so this is another thing to think about if these kinds of issues are happening here at Cornell as well. And finally, the last thing I wanted to mention is that there's currently unionization efforts underway at multiple Ivies. Most of these efforts are more private, and so I won't give any more details on those, but it's something to keep in mind, since there is, of course, Graduate Students United here at Cornell that is organized already. Funding, this is an interesting one. Not all of the professional student governments, graduate professional student governments, are allowed to administer an activity fee the same way we are. We get the activity fee, we're the ones in charge of that, we allocate it to various student groups, but that's not a very common model. Several of the schools get their budget exclusively from the dean's office, and it's a changing number every year. So I have to say that we at least vote as an assembly in terms of the budget that we have for our internal budget, and in terms of the budget that we administer, we seem to be a bit ahead of the curve in that area, which is another thing to be happy about. And the other thing is the Ivy Plus Summit funding is a pressing issue. So many schools, it seems every year this post-school is on the verge of canceling the summit due to funding concerns. Where is the money going to come from? As I mentioned, we are among the best funded out there, and it would be difficult for us to come up with that money out of pocket. Of course, we were saving up for it with, anticipating hosting it. But not all schools have that ability. If they're strapped for cash already, it's hard for them to raise that money. And so they rely on the deans to fund the Ivy Plus Summit. So fortunately, our own dean's office has confirmed that they will be funding the Ivy Plus Summit when it's our turn to host. But there is a question as to whether or not it should switch from a host school funding the entire thing to a every school pays a registration fee. And the registration fee would hopefully still be covered by the dean, but that way it would no longer be sort of a $10,000-$15,000 all at once payment, so much as sort of a every year pay $1,000-$1,200 to the host school, and then it becomes less of a burden on all those involved. Involvement, this is something I found interesting, but other schools have very active student government organizations at the college level and at the individual school level, whereas for us, we sort of have the Graduate Professional Student Assembly, and then we interface to an extent with the field organizations, but not to the extent that they do at other campuses. So that's something I would like to bring back to Cornell, is this in terms of involving those sort of more local groups. So for us, that would be the field organizations. They also tend to have much larger executive boards of 10-plus people, which I thought was also kind of surprising. And finally, in terms of the administration being involved in student governance, there is a varying degree of involvement in terms of access to administration. Many schools report never really seeing the president or the provost, whereas we get to much more face time with them. And also in terms of the Board of Trustees, it's not very common for us to have the access to the Board of Trustees that we do have. So that's another sort of interesting thing to take back from this conference. So next year it's going to be at Dartmouth. Six delegates are invited from Cornell to attend the Ivy Plus Summit at Dartmouth, and I really hope that we can send six people next year. The most common question I was asked was, why was I the only one from Cornell? so next year, hopefully, we'll be able to, which I understand that, you know, we're all very busy people, but so, yeah. So it's going to be at Dartmouth. The GPSA will fund a hotel room. Food is covered by the host institution. So that just leaves the cost of getting to Dartmouth, which is basically just a couple tanks of gas in the car. So very low cost, great opportunity for networking. I had a blast. New Haven was an interesting town. And Yale's campus was Yale's campus, and that's, I'll be very civil with that. So that's all I have for the Ivy Plus Summit. Is there any questions? I want to say, not the number of hours they expect to teach, the number of hours they expected to work total. So they were, teaching assistants are paid on the expectations that they'll teach 10 hours, I believe, and then work, I want to say, 40 hours outside of that teaching requirement. But they said that the teaching requirement was approaching more of 15 or 16 hours of work, and so it's unrealistic to then expect them to be working, if they're going to be working these 50-hour weeks. And also, there was an issue that many graduate students felt they didn't get anything done on their dissertation work while teaching. And so trying to reduce the amount of teaching hours so that they could actually, you know, graduate on time. Or not on time, but, you know, not take so long to reach. Because, of course, late-stage funding is another issue which we all deal with. And it's also an issue at all institutions. Any other questions? All right. So going back up. Is Rebecca here?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, sorry, never mind.
All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Rebecca. I'm a PhD in communication. I used to be a little bit more involved with the GPSA a couple years ago. And now I'm part of a couple external committees. And with my research being focused on health, my volunteer work also is involved. So I serve as a graduate representative to a group called the Student Mental Health and Wellness Committee. And it's a lot of fun because it's people from all over the university, administrators, from the registrar's office, student services, contacts from all the colleges, et cetera. And there's always, so there's one meeting per semester, and each is organized around a different issue. So this year, this semester, it was a student panel, and there was a representative from the graduate school, so it was great to see a graduate student represented, because often heads of degrees are undergraduate focus. So there were 10 graduate students and then 3 undergrads, and it was really interesting. 2 of the undergrads were part of Cornell Minds Matter. Does anyone show hands? Cornell Minds Matter. Have you ever heard of it? Okay. Good to hear. And then there was one other woman who was an ears counselor, part of the counseling program. So the panel was all around the stress culture at Cornell. And I reached out to the board to see if you all would be interested in the results. And they said that this might be appropriate for you all to hear. The real reason I reached out also is because a big thread of this discussion was how just this huge pressure to always be working, always be stressed, and always be busy here. And I don't think it's unique to Cornell. I think this is definitely common in other college campuses as well. But a lot of the students just have a lot of interesting things to say. There was something that was thrown out. They're like the suffering Olympics. I feel like I'm in the suffering Olympics. Because students constantly ask each other, you know, how much few hours did you sleep last night? How much work do you have? And people wear it as kind of a badge of honor on their shoulder. And so, again, my reason, you know, for reaching out was how this actually came up a couple times. The students said, you know, I have this role model from my community, from my faculty. So I sit down in my advisor's office. I'm lucky if I get a half an hour meeting with him over the course of the semester. Or her, and when I do, all they, you know, the first 5 minutes they're telling me how stressed and, you know, how tired and, you know, overworked they are. And this just really kind of struck a chord with me because, you know, you definitely see this among, I'm sure, our advisors, but a lot of the students kind of rallied around this notion of role modeling stress from people in their undergraduate graduate. So I thought that there was a really cool message here that with the contact that we have to the undergraduate population, but then also among each other and with our advisors and interacting with our colleagues at the graduate or faculty level, to maybe figure out changing the dialogue or ways to support each other in being a little bit more healthy and supporting good habits in taking breaks, going for a run, not talking about how little you slept, et cetera. Another thing I just wanted to mention was health leave. This is something I'm sure many of you can relate to our teaching assistants. A lot of students, well, taking a health leave for a semester is something that is actually a really great idea for some students. And I don't know if any of you have looked into years counseling or anything like this, understanding how to work with students who might be going through difficult times, but there are great resources here. Just to kind of know about these options for our students, when we have someone in our class come into the room and really frustrated, it's just great to know about these resources. So two of the students of the five have taken a health leave of absence, and what that means is you leave for the term, you get a W. If you're really, you're stressed, you're overworked, you have too much going on. So it's actually a great resource for people who are really in a hard time, either at the undergraduate or our colleagues in the graduate school as well. So knowing what is out there is a great thing. They said about 142 graduate and undergraduate, I don't know what the proportion is, the split grad versus undergrad, but take leave every year, and then Cornell also has a couple of resources to help people kind of assimilate back to the Cornell population. So the last came up, that is all. Just a couple of brief observations just wanted to share with you all. Are there any questions? I think because a lot of the other students who are in the class are getting, they have to finish their assignments by a certain set of deadlines, and W is kind of a good in between of, okay, I understand that they so-and-so is going through a hard time, you need to go away for a little while, we're not going to fail you completely, but we're just going to give you a W. And then if these students do have to come back and retake those classes, or maybe they can bring it to their professors and get some further instruction.
So last year we had a resolution about mental health, about tracking all the children with that staff. I don't know if that was something that was
done. It wasn't. I didn't know that. My NetID, if you have access to the data, my email address for anyone who's interested is RFR38. If you want to share that with me, I would definitely, because there's some of the old men's panel, Susan Murphy, it's like Susan Murphy, but then it's also the head of the next student like health promotion arm, this wonderful guy from Marshall. He really kind of sets the agenda. And so being able to do is good to know that there are folks in these topics, administrators and people who are living in residence halls, universities to talk about and hear about. So that would be a great thing. I've been on this for 4 years, There has been one panel directed exclusively towards graduate student issues. So the more the merrier, and that's definitely what I am kind of conduit for you guys, for you all to just group. So I think our house is pretty important. I'd like to bring that to bear as a group. So if you want to email me, please, by all means do. Because I don't think they have.
It's interesting because definitely Tim and other people were mentioned at the end of the resolution, so I thought you might have to do that. What happens to somebody funding health insurance and access to university resources if they were to take a head seat during the middle of the semester?
Okay. The first part of that question is, you take a health leave of absence, the funding that you have remaining is owed you when you come back. It may be in a different form, an RA ship rather than a TA ship or a TA ship rather than a fellowship. depending on what the fields and department resources still are. But how many of that, since you still have access to health insurance, your funding when you come back? Now, the last part of your question was, if you take in the middle of the semester?
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking about, you know, if you're TA and you have withdraw.
So when can that send me the help leave of absence recommendation? The first thing I do is write to the student, adjust to the student, and begin to find out, like, if you were TAing, are you going to try to finish, and do you want the effective date at the end of the semester? Or if you've already left your TA position, and when you do that, in some cases, the field has stopped the funding, then that could be the effective date. But we can work with the student to determine what date he wants to start. And we talk about what are the funding implications, what are the implications if you were registered for classes, because you can choose to stay in those classes, and with the instructor who's taken in for 3 hours, we can wipe out all the registration, we can put the effective date. We don't go backwards in time to previous semesters or years, but if you need to take it in the middle of the semester, we can back that day to the beginning of the semester, so the registration is wiped out, and then none of those classes will show up. There isn't necessarily studies unless you want them to stay there and get incomplete. And there's another piece of that that I need to make. And we do, try to write to the students. Then I write to the field, your chair, and your PTS, and we talk about, like, if they've already paid your health insurance for fall, and you're leaving sometime in fall or the spring, we ask them if they want to continue to pay loans. Go ahead and, because they've already paid your shit for the year. Won't they please keep that payment in effect, even if you're leaving during spring or during fall or for spring semester? I mean, I've only known maybe once or twice in my almost 2.5 years now where a field said, you know, we're so resource strapped that when the student leaves to go on a health leave of absence and we have to find somebody else to TA, then we really need that shift and we need that stipend and we need that tuition, which I think we should leave anyway. And they did want to withdraw the shift for the spring, even though they paid for fall. But students can stay on health insurance if they're paying for themselves if the field is not able to cover them. Something else in there that I'm not catching that you want to write.
That was your question.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Another question.
Yeah.
So I think it's really great that you guys are talking about changing climate for members and everything for it. But I've worked with one thing kind of come up to British grad students is that sometimes it's not just a culture, but there might be certain advisors in your lab that maybe have a history of producing grad students that have a lot of theoretical emotional health problems that talk to me before I think about it. And that quite seems like it's something that must be that maybe the administration should actually talk to faculty members and then maybe we can discuss it all.
The graduate students, I can speak to the meeting, if that's your question. It is a meeting, the graduate student who was represented had a fantastic advisor. She, her advisor is a Western president, and she has a wonderful, she does a million things. She's a great role model. And she spoke to how lucky she was, and she's definitely not all of us. You know, I think there are some dire cases out there that you mentioned, and it's a huge issue. I'm not sure how much the GBSA dealt with that issue. It's come up a little bit in the Denver spec work that I did during my network as spec as chair for this group. But that's a really important issue, and we can almost spend entire GBSA meeting talking about that. Entire season. I'm almost going to be talking about that. I think it would be great. I'd love to have dialogue with you. Maybe you'll reach out.
Okay, yeah. My thought would just be like that. In some cases, it might be that incremental resources have to be targeted and perhaps advised to people who are implementing the whole culture.
Definitely. I agree. And that was kind of the message that was given to me from the panel. go forth and talk to everyone. So that's why I respect you all for your work at this point, you know, with undergraduates and also with our colleagues. Don't partake in the suffering of it. You know, hey, I'm doing okay. You're doing okay. That's okay. No, I'm not. It's okay to be okay. So that was what I was thinking about. And I hope it would be great for some more institutionalized, you know, education or you know, work with advisors and people who have, you know, high contact with us.
So we have time for one more question.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, please.
If we wanted to set up a meeting with the council,
what would you say?
The council?
Sorry, the mental health counselor?
Yeah.
Does that mean two more shots? For the GPSI?
Or just
like an
interview.
Oh, okay. So there are peers as a way to get trained. You can do training on how to have these conversations with undergrads, be a better counselor, and...
No. So I say I want to meet with somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Like, right. I would stress I want to meet with somebody.
Yeah. Thank you. So the university has a couple of resources. First, there's Let's Talk, and that's a great one to start. Let's Talk, you can walk in, the whole thing is walk in and say, you can say anything, start anywhere. And so you don't have to sign in through an ID, you don't have to log in, you don't have to go through health insurance. People in different locations all over campus, and it's not just in us, are there to just talk. So Let's Talk is a fantastic resource. And then there are also great counseling resources at the university. A couple of people who are specific to graduate students, so professional and then PhD, you know, working with their dissertation and things like that. So, that was another part of the conversation, and make these types of, you know, engagements, like working with the council, making that more normative. So, Let's Talk is a great place to start, and then if you want more of a formalized relationship with someone at Gannett, you can reach out to their counseling services. Called TAC. It's an actual great question, an important thing for all of us to remember.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
My ID is R530. If you have any questions, I'd love to speak with you now.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so next we'll go into reports of officers and committee updates. For the executive committee, I wanted to mention that we now have a field rep from New York City Tech. He was Google Hangouting, that's the verb now, into the meeting for the first part. He had to leave early, but so now we have capability to communicate with him, so we can teleconference him to our meetings. And they also have a student organization over there to administer the budget, which we gave back to them. So basically, we give back almost the entire activity fee to the New York City Tech students for them to administer in their own projects and programs as they see fit. That's all I had.
I actually want to do an update. So the executive board is looking into the reduced tuition for self-paced students for the 6th and 7th year of study. So a little bit of background about this is back in, I think, spring 2013, GPSA as a whole has asked the school to consider a reduced tuition for self-paced students in their 6th and 7th year. Typically, it affects students from humanities as the average medium time to degree in the humanities is about 7.1 years. It would be great if you want to, like, people from the humanities can talk to me about, like, do you know people, like, taking this reduced tuition, or does it work for you, things like that. So, thank you.
Okay, and next would be operations and staffing.
Okay, so the last few times we've filled a few positions in-house. This time I'm just going to ask you to contact me if any of these spark your interest. A few people emailed me about getting in touch with the student assembly, their dining committee. I'm working on getting the new contacts there. I had old contacts, but I think I'm getting in touch with the right people. So if you're interested in that or if you want to do that, just send me more emails, and hopefully when I get in contact with them, I can put you in contact with them too. So committees with vacancies. So last week we advertised the Big Red Barn Advisory Committee. We filled one position, and then I contacted Chris Cordos in charge of that, and he filled another position. So there's still just one position open for the Big Red Barn Advisory Committee. If that's something you're interested in joining, you can learn about it more online and email me at ALG283 at Cornell. And then this one's a unique position. We need someone to be the liaison to the employee assembly. The employee assembly represents all employees at Cornell. As graduate students, we don't necessarily, we are not employees of the university, but this could represent research technicians, any sort of job that's just not specifically student or faculty. Or does faculty count as employee?
No.
Okay, so not student or faculty, just lots of jobs out there. But they need to have a graduate student perspective and a liaison so we can keep in touch with what they have going on and they can know what we have going on in the GPSA. So if you're interested in getting in touch with this group, let me know. And then as we've heard about today, there's the University Council on Mental Health and Welfare. So if you're interested in getting involved with this next semester to be part of the conversation that you heard today, please email me and I'll put you in touch with them. And then as always, there's the GPSA internal committees. A few of them are filling up. But just contact the chairs if you're interested. Thank you.
Okay. All right. next, we will go to appropriations.
I just have a brief update that the committee met 2 weeks ago, and we began the process of looking at the obligations for the various groups and the procedure for applying for byline funding.
Okay.
That's an ongoing process, and we'll be reaching out to each of the groups to get an update on what they've been doing to meet the recommendations from the previous application, and just generally to find out how they're doing with the use of the funding, and to gain any background that we might need to update any obligations going forward. So that's ongoing work, and I don't have any.
Communications. Student Advocacy will be electing the chair for today. Faculty Awards?
Oh, that'd be great. No,
yeah, no, are you still looking for committee members?
No.
Okay.
Well, is there an app on the committee?
There is. Email me.
Okay, I will get back to
you. Okay.
Further than I want to be a playing.
Okay. All right. Chair for Diversity and National Students contacted me. She won't be here, but there was no updates. Programming Board.
Nothing Lucy's here today, but we are still looking for committee members, so we have an overflow. And we are also having an inter-school mixer this Thursday at the Big Red Barn from 7 to 10. Everybody is welcome to come. We are targeting 3 schools. We have the chemistry department, the vet school, and music and theater. I think that's it. And the zombie work a couple weeks ago was a very big success. It was awesome because there were lots of people at the Big Red Barn who've never seen Halloween before, and then they were like kind of observing, like, what are you all doing, dressing up like zombies, and then they also dressed up like zombies, and then I think they went back to their lab.
Awesome. Okay, so with that then, we'll go into elections. We have two positions to elect today. The first position is the voting member at large. It's, basically, any field representative can step up and be a voting member. Well, can be elected to be a voting member. Just to let you know, the only difference between being a field representative and being a voting member is the voting members actually get to vote on the resolutions. And you are there's more strict attendance requirements if you are a voting member.
And also eligibility to become a chair later.
Yes. You are also automatically eligible to become a chair or a member of the executive board as a voting member and not as a field representative. So, are there any nominations or volunteers for voting member at large. Okay. Are there any other nominations or volunteers? Okay. Would you like to accept the nomination? Okay. Now we need to write this down. Not a normal problem for us, unfortunately. So. Yeah. Self-nominations are allowed. Okay. Same as the charm. Also, point of information, I was informed that nominations actually do not require a second, but Austin that Todd endorses it. Okay. So, now, do you have paper?
This is paper?
No, 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 it's just for ballots.
No.
Okay.
Do you have paper?
Oh, look at this. Okay, so we'll have. Are there any first? We're still open to nominations or volunteers.
And should we do a little speech?
What?
The
vacancy is for a voting member. So if a voting member steps down during the year, that position becomes an at-large seat, so any field representative. So normally we break it down by caucus, and the caucus elects voting members. But if then one of those voting members steps down, it becomes an at-large vacancy. Someone who's called very stepped down as a voting member, and so now there's a vacancy. Yep. Okay, so we do have ballots. Excellent. So, if close question, are there any other nominations or volunteers? Alright, seeing none, we'll close the floor nominations. I would like each representative, or each not candidate, there we go, to give us a 1 minute sort of overview of yourself, why you want to be a voting member, and why you think we should vote for you to be a voting member.
All names.
So first off, we'll go in the order that they were nominated. Michaela. Yeah, well they're wired in, not, so if you want to come down. Come on down. There.
Point of order.
Would you like this?
Only voting members get to vote, right?
No. To vote for voting members at large, everyone gets to vote. The only restriction of voting members is whether they want to vote for resolutions. All other things are open to everyone to vote. Okay.
Hi, I'm Nikki. I'm a fourth year PhD candidate in classics. I was a voting member last year, and I didn't do it again this year because I was taking my eighth, but I just finished. And I'm on the student advocacy committee, and I really enjoyed it last year. And I especially like getting to represent the humanities, and so I had a role.
Thank you. So next, we'll have David.
Daniel.
Daniel, I can
see. You can't read my handwriting.
I'll address it real quick here.
Okay.
My name is Daniel. I'm a fourth year student in physics. I nominated myself because I believe I've already demonstrated commitment to the department to be the same, and then I have taken on the role of committee chair without being on the board.
Okay. Okay. And finally, Kara.
Hi, I'm Rob. I'll stay here. I'm Kara. I'm a second year veterinary student. I think as Richard mentioned before, we're trying to get kind of our field areas involved a little bit more in the graduate community, especially considering that school has 400 and will be expanding to almost 600 students. In the upcoming year, we are a large member of the community, and I think that we'd like to get a number of our voices out there. I serve on most of the committees at the school, and actually a number of our kind of larger government that we have, we model some things off of, and I serve on the curriculum advisory board there, but also kind of have the inner workings of that to bring incorporate what the rest of you all, and I think it's unfortunate that we can sit here and not even know that there's a mix of that we're invited to, so I would love to be able to be part of this organization and work on communication.
So, with that, everyone should have a ballot in front of them. We'll be the ones counting them, so I guess we
should.
Or might as well have ballots. Okay, so please write in the name of one person that you would like to elect to voting member. I can actually put them up here.
K-A-R-A-C.
Hold on, I can put them on.
Well, you can't read my hand.
And if your last name Rosenthal, is it?
Daniel.
Rosenbaum, B-A-U-M.
Carol. Okay. All right. I think that's... Okay, so these are the candidates. Your pen.
I have a pen. Here, you guys can vote first, and then I'll
read it.
Okay. I don't even know if you can use it.
We're probably going to push back on the resolution. So how about you want to collect that title for this thing? We might be able to get to both of them, actually. I mean, we have 40 minutes left. That, as I said, I thought it was 6:30 already. Okay.
What?
No, this
one.
This person won. Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Yes, picture. All right. So. Okay. All right. So, with all the votes tallied, the result is kept secret, but the winner is Kara. As in the count is kept secret, not the result, sorry. Congratulations on being voting member, and alright, so next we have the Advocacy Committee Chair. So, are there any nominations for or volunteers for Advocacy Committee Chair? And now I see he's leaving. He saw that this was next and started. Okay. Are there any other nominations? All right. Seeing none, we will elect by unanimous consent. Are there any opposed? All right. Then, congratulations. You and Jesse are now IT committee chair. Okay. So now we'll move on into new business. Well, we're already in new business, but we'll move on to resolutions. The first is resolution number 4. So resolution on the research assistant and teaching assistant stipend difference. So whereas teaching assistants receive a 2.7% stipend increase this year, while research assistants receive a 0% stipend increase, whereas this is the first time in several decades that Cornell's mandated minimum stipend rate has varied between different types of graduate students, whereas this decision was made by the Board of Trustees without engaged transparent discussion with the graduate student body at large, whereas a graduate student can receive a substantial pay cut when switching from a teaching assistant position to a research assistant position, therefore, be resolved that the Graduate Professional Student Assembly is opposed to any difference between research assistantship and teaching assistantship stipend. Be it further resolved that this change could potentially damage collaboration and the academic climate on campus. Be it further resolved that the Graduate Professional Student Assembly encourages the administration to garner feedback from a wide range of graduate students in the future before making substantive changes to graduate student financial support, especially when such changes differ from established precedents. Be it further resolved that the Graduate Professional Student Assembly looks forward to working with President David Corton, President-elect Elizabeth Garrett, and Dean of Graduate School Barbara Newth to revisit the change through transparent and substantive conversation. So, I will say that this version differs from the one that was emailed out. There were some grammatical corrections made for us by Todd. So I guess formally we need to approve said corrections. So is there a motion to approve the grammatical corrections made by Todd? Second. All right. We'll approve by unanimous consent. Are there any opposed? Okay. So the grammatical amendment stands. Now, are there any further amendments or anyone wants to speak for or against the resolution? Yes.
So I want to speak in favor and then propose an amendment. So and I think I actually, if you don't know about this issue, this is only really to the detriment of research assistantships or people that have had RA ships. I don't have one, but I still think it's terrible that we should like have any sort of classification among grad students, you know, as far as like who's worth what in terms of money or not. So thanks for passing the grammatical changes, but I actually think that this resolution needs a little bit more bite, especially because the like last resolve is so hand-holdy when this is actually, this seems to be a really big problem. So, I'm proposing an amendment of two additional whereas clauses, which read as follows. I'll just tell you what they're trying to do, and you guys can, I'll bring it down so you don't have to transcribe.
Okay.
So the idea is just like this, for anyone who's been part of the like unionizing or disorientation conversations going on, there's a lot of people who are frustrated with the way shared governance is working or not working, and I think that we need to make it clear that like this bypassing of the shared governance system, like this is a big problem. So here are the following whereas clauses. Whereas deciding important issues like stipend rates without input from the larger community weakens the shared governance system at Cornell. And whereas bypassing the shared governance system discourages community members, including graduate professional students, from participating in the shared governance system as a means, as a channel for grieving, for airing grievances.
Okay. Okay. Is there any comments on the amendment, or is there a motion to approve said amendment?
So there were two whereas.
Oh, could you bring a second item on this?
So I have them between lines 9 or 11, basically. And so, yes, thank you. So because it's right after talking about the lack of transparent discussion, which seems like a good time to hammer home that transparent discussion is supposed to be something that we value.
Okay, yeah, so I...
want to say I appreciate that comment and decision. I have not heard, I like the resolution, I have not heard the rationale for not raising the RASK rate while the TA. I just haven't heard the rationale. I'm not sure if you're going to confirm the rationale. Exactly.
The argument that the former graduate representative to the Board of Trustees said is that the programs that you research systems are more like natural sciences and like they work off of grants, and they're more peer institutions are like state schools, which have lower stipends. So those of us in fields like, you know, natural sciences are like competition, I guess, are like good state schools that pay lower stipends, whereas those in the humanities and have a PA ship, their competition is other Ivy League schools. So that's part of it. And the other part was that it's a way to find a way to somehow reduce the stipend rate so that Cornell will be more competitive with grants. Neither of those, I think, are good justifications, but that's what the Board of Trustees apparently said. Maybe someone else can elaborate.
I haven't actually. This was all happened before I was elected and before I was meeting, so I went to the May meeting before I was officially a member of the there, and it happened with the first time, but I actually don't know.
I will say, point on that, previous elected trustee, Nighthawk, he was there for that decision. He wrote an op-ed in the Cornell Sun on it, so if you want to get his opinion on what happened, it's available. I think, did we?
Yeah, I texted it away.
Yeah, so that link was in the email with the information for this meeting, if you want to go back and read the article. So that would be our trustee's input on it.
Yeah, and I know he was very involved.
What's the history of stipend increases over the past few years? Is a 2.7% increase been pretty standard, or is this?
I believe so. It's generally raised with tuition. Or do you? No. Okay. It's generally raised with tuition. Jen.
To try to, or at least, and it really is a pilot effort this year,
There's no decision to get for next year, and to turn off all your recording devices. But I don't think the same thing will happen next year, because they don't want it to fall any lower. But what the faculty was saying, so don't quote me on that, okay? Nobody's going to fund you, right? Because the physical began doesn't know what she's talking about, right? So the faculty had said, the DGSs had said, we're losing too many RHs because the tuition and the stipend is so expensive, because we do give faculty a 50% break on the tuition. I mean, I think that's known, right? I just didn't believe it. So that faculty will write into a grant more slots to support more students. Cornell gives 50% break on tuition if they will put a graduate student on an externally funded project like NIH, NSF. But it was the stipend that made some faculty think, you know, it's actually less expensive on my grant. And some of the federal grant agencies were actually saying, you know, we're going to fund you to the degree that you asked for all of these RA or graduate students. Why? And then they were saying, our competitive peers are those at Wisconsin, help me name all of some of the UC schools, like UC Davis, probably UC and FC. You know, help me name some of those really good state schools. I was at the University of Tennessee for 20 years of faculty. Nobody is going to put UC on that list. And so they're going to be competitive, have faculty that are better, much better than those schools. But for this year, it was kind of a pilot effort to see what would happen if they kept the, and the other point I'll make is the minimum RA stipend. And the other thing I wanted to try to find out today when I saw the agenda for tonight is, when we were meeting with the DGSs in four different meetings for the four large discipline clusters, you know, a number of fields were saying, we don't keep our stipend at the minimum anyway. What the university minimum is, we always offer more than that. And some of you may, and I don't have the list with me, and I don't know if he actually kept a list, but he was just hearing this, but I would like to find out from the field, those who said, well, great, there's a minimum, but we're never going to offer just the minimum. We were above it before, and we're above it again this year. I think you know that your field that pays the RA stipend more than minimum. What is the university minimum? You know that? Another good question. If you see a data set, I can look it up. It's posted on the graduate school website.
So to bring us back to the discussion of the resolution itself, we're still discussing currently the two whereas clauses, which were amended to the resolution, not the resolution as a whole, unless there's a motion to approve those two whereas clauses. Yes?
Christine, now I believe that she wanted me to share, actually talking about this part of the resolution right before the two whereas clauses, and I think that it's well in there to say elaborate on the whereas just before about transparency discussion that so Christine was on the executive committee last year and expressed that they had communication with the administration about the decision beforehand and were extremely frustrated by the fact that it wasn't transparent on a larger level, so that frustration carried over from that perspective. I want to put that out there as part of the discussion.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve the amendments to the resolution? Okay, so, all right, so for the amendment now, not the resolution itself, we'll vote by unanimous consent. Are there any opposed? All right, amendment passes.
I do have a question, though.
Yes.
So, I don't know if this question is better directed towards Dan or... because I don't know if we're going to run my work, and I don't know if we're going to know the answer to this, but it seems like the DGSs who came to the grad school to say that it's getting too expensive to teach graduate students, have to pay tuition for those graduate students, so
instead of the money coming out of the graduate student stipends, who were usually the lowest paid people on the total pool, and definitely doing the graduate work, it seems like what would be the logic in lowering the stipend rate versus lowering the tuition rate?
Yeah,
so especially when already if we're getting federal funding, we're getting grant funding, we have to pay a huge overhead to the graduate, to the Cornell University before the money even gets to the lab.
The best answer I know to that is through the university's budget and through a large group, the graduate school budget to support graduate students is funded in four different ways. One of the ways is tuition revenue. And we talked about the various things we would like to do or we've been asked to do. One, for example, is once you pass the ASAM, tuition goes, tuition drops. And we know, for example, we know how many millions of dollars in revenue we would lose if that happened. It's either 2 or 12 million, and I know that's a big difference. I know there's a difference in numbers. I still work with the financial side of it, and now you know why, right? Well, if I did, I would really come to the top of my head. And speaking of the meeting tomorrow afternoon, we will have all of these numbers in for tomorrow afternoon. And one of the other things that, you know, when we held the stipend flat for RA, I always heard that, are some of you aware that you're in fields where you got either more summer funding or you got summer funding when you hadn't been promised or expecting it? I mean, I think that was what was done with that money. If you see that as any savings at all, if it was ever, you know, in the budget, then I think that was directed for more summer funding for more students. But like I said, no decision has been made going forward. And it's just as likely, maybe even more likely, as Kevin already said, the greater probability I think is we won't hold the RA stipend flat next year. This was kind of an experiment, a pilot year. And again, it was just the minimum amount that was kept flat. And we'll find out how exactly how many fields the 89. So there's fewer than 89 who actually have RA, a lot of them actually give more than the minimum anyway.
I think it'll be good to see the numbers.
Okay.
How many PhD students in IR? It's only one record, right? I remember that field said that they pay more than that.
I don't know what they know. My advisor is in Iowa, I have some funding transfer.
So, Alexander?
It seems to me that there are two separate issues going on in this resolution. Firstly, that the decision was made without consulting sheriff's governance in a collaborative manner. And secondly, whether or not this decision to increase the size of teaching assistants versus research assistants was warranted. And I feel that perhaps these two issues would be better addressed in two separate resolutions. Because on the one hand, I fully support that the university should be consulting its graduate students before making these types of decisions. But I think it's totally separate conversation whether or not this type of a decision was impact the number of research assistants that professors are taking in their labs. I've certainly heard that concern a number of times that many faculty are more likely to take postdocs now than graduate students, and that has discouraged a number of my colleagues in the veterinary school from pursuing complementary advanced degrees. And I think that's a separate issue from the trade governance issues.
Okay.
I wanted to add to that. I'm in economics, which has kind of a lot of patience in our issue. And at least my impression in economics is that there tends to be a lot more competition for our issues. They tend to be more attractive to people because they're, you know, providing more support towards your research, sometimes more flexibility in terms of when you work your hours. So, I mean, certainly I would be more in favor of everyone getting an increase than having the, you know, obviously I don't mind. But I do feel like there are a lot of reasons that, at least in my field, I don't want to generalize that it is warranted to have higher compensation rates for the PAs than for RAs.
Okay. Any other?
Well, I think that, like, I mean, I'm in history, so it's kind of the same thing. Like, you know, an RA is like you get like kind of out of doing like anything that's a major that you paid for. But in a lot of these other natural sciences fields, people are putting in 60-80 hours a week in the lab. So I don't think it's fair that they get paid less when they're probably doing more work than teaching assistants. Like, I don't think currently I do more work. I don't know if it was justified for me, but for everyone else, I guess that mainly relies on grants, it would be more.
Okay, so in the interest of time, I think we'll keep it to three more people, and then we'll call it a question.
Yeah, I'm completely new, and I'm not really sure how these resolutions work, but my question is, and I think it's along the lines of what we're talking about now, like, what are we hoping to achieve with this resolution? What is the purpose of it? What happens after we pass
So the ideal scenario from our standpoint would be after the administration sees this, they would then speak with us and engage us in trying to figure out what the best course of action is to talk about this change. Either, you know, keeping it as is but increasing the RA shape in the future if they can convince us that the research assistantship should be kept lower to make it more attractive, or are there other options? Can we cut tuition, things like that, by the amounts that our RA shapes were cut? And increase them to match it again. But basically, we want those types of conversations to happen, to be involved in the actual conversations about this, not to give them our opinion and have them decide something completely different. So that would be the best case scenario, is that this is a message to President Scorton that we're dissatisfied with his decision. He does read all of these resolutions personally, so it's a message to him that we're dissatisfied, to talk to us to see if we can alleviate the situation, would be the purpose of this type of resolution.
I sympathize with the sentiment that you were expressing, that the document is a little bit pulled apart in terms of focus, and I wanted to propose that could be resolved possibly just by reorganizing the where happens.
Mm-hmm.
So as it stands, I think that there are six where happens, and the first two where happens have to make statements about the significance of the actual change in the citizen, and then also the sixth whereas goes back to that theme. I'm wondering if we could take the sixth whereas, move it up so it's the third whereas, if all of them are together, then keep the other whereas that those that speak to the issue of transparency and inclusion, and then double back with the new sixth
Okay.
Yeah, so I think it's important to say that as we take this off,
Okay. So you're saying amending it by moving the sixth whereas clause so up to...
Now, they can make it a third clause, or I'm not sure, is there some redundancy in the sixth whereas clause in terms of, is it repeating to some degree what the first whereas clause is saying?
Supposed to, but Jesse, do you
I don't think it's a repetition. I think it's making the point. I would support the term movement because I think that the method in which the policy, through which the policy is enacted, is connected to the policy itself. I think that this is viewed as two different issues. While I see that as being, one may have an opinion about the kind of lack of transparency and a different opinion about the actual difference in pay, I think the difference in pay comes from a view of the contingency of graduate student labor that contributes to the view that graduate students aren't involved in the conversation. So I think this is connected. So I think that this idea of reorganization kind of channels that. And I just want to say, I don't think it repeats, I think it's necessary to have it because it makes the point that by having the separation, not only are you separating people who are on stages and who are on stage stages, but acknowledging that students move liminally between the two. And that phenomenon is also affected.
Okay.
Shifting the point, going to the last year for the result, does the assembly look forward to working with President David Sporting? I mean, I think we should have a more direct thing whether we are resolving that we would like to work with them to revisit the change and not have it look forward, looking forward to.
Okay. So we'll consider the two amendments separately. So the first amendment then, go ahead and actually just so make this the third whereas clause. And then the therefore we'll make its way back up to there. So basically, as we're saying, move the whereas clause to make the three, one dealing with the pay difference, and then the three, which deal with the transparency issue, be together. And then, do you think there should be a final whereas clause to bring it back, or I think? Okay. I would personally say I think it's better to leave it without an additional whereas clause, because I think it already makes the point that we are upset that there was not transparency in the issue, but so for now, I guess we will consider this amendment to move the whereas clause, the sixth whereas clause, to now be the third whereas clause. So is there any comments or a motion to approve that amendment? Is there a second? All those in, by universal consent, are there any opposed to the amendment, not to the resolution? Seeing none, that will be, I need to name the guy later time. That will be, okay. And now, this therefore needs to go away. Okay. So, and then the other question was, so is there any wording, specific wording that you'd like to say? Instead of
thinking something along the lines,
okay.
To revisit the change.
I like that. To work with present David Scorton principles. So it would read, with the change would read, be it further resolved as graduate professors in assembly request the opportunity to work with President David Scorton, President-elect Elizabeth Garrett, and Dean of the Graduate School Barbara Newth to revisit the change through transparent and substantive conversation. So, is there any comments or on the amendment? Is there a motion to approve the amendment? On the amendment or on the... Okay.
There's on the...
Is there a second?
Sorry, on the first line, there's an extra space after the first word. Just sorry to be that person, or yeah, right there. Thank you.
There we go.
Line 41, the left. The 42, the left.
You think I'd know it's from my name. Okay. Are there... So...
Alright,
is there a second? Alright, all those in favor? Or, by universal consent, are there any opposed? Seeing none, the amendment passes. Now, we are kind of starting to run short on time now. Is there... Now, there's been a lot of talk of trying to split this into two resolutions. I would speak in favor of passing this resolution as it stands. And if we also want to pass a stronger worded resolution on transparency in general, we can consider that at a later time. But I will say that, is there any person who would like to speak either for or against the amendment? And then I believe we should call a question on the resolution itself.
So just to be clear, if you think Alex is right, this is really two amendments and we're doing the wrong thing, you should just vote no and then propose one or two resolutions totally right. Separately on the next meeting.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a good point to make. So, alright, is there a motion to call the question?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Alright, we will vote by placard. All those in favor of the resolution. This is a voting members only, including our newly elected voting member, can vote. So, 10. All right, so that's 10 in favor. All those opposed? 1, 2. All right. 3. Oh, 3. Are there any abstaining? 2. So 10 to 3 to 2, the resolution passes. So, we will end, again, if we want to consider a resolution on transparency in general, we can most certainly consider that, and we will be, let me go to save this, and we will keep you guys updated on any conversations that we do have with the administration on this topic. So, seeing as how we're a little bit close to the time the schedule meeting is adjourned, I believe we should push back Resolution 5 until our next regularly scheduled meeting so we can discuss it fully. Just kind of a plug for it, this is, we're looking to create an ad hoc committee on sustainability to sort of coordinate graduate student efforts at achieving Cornell's goal of carbon neutrality by 2035. So if you're interested in sustainability, please consider being on this committee if we do pass this resolution at our next meeting, but we'll discuss it more further then. Next, we'll move on to open forum. First thing I want to mention in open forum, because it means to bring this up a couple times, is in terms of meeting location, right now we can schedule either to go back to Warren Hall or to stay here in Malat. Now, I will say that there was some concern before about acoustics in this room. We have microphones in here now to try and help with that. Can the people in the back actually hear us now? Yeah. Okay. And so Warren Hall, for those of you learning around last year, is basically just a flat conference room. It doesn't have this nice sort of seating where we all face each other. So we have to sort of arrange the table so we can sort of face each other. It can be a bit noisier than here. So I guess we'll do a quick show of hands. Who here, so only vote, I'll ask to only vote if you actually were around last year to have seen Warren Hall to know the difference. Sorry for the new people that sort of, you know, wouldn't want an uninformed decision. For those who have seen both rooms, raise your hand if you'd like to stay here. All right. Raise your hand if you'd like to go back to Warren. And this is why it's important to consult the general body. Okay. So clearly we would rather stay here than move back. Okay. Is there anything else for open forum? Yes.
Justin and I are about the new co-chair of the
True. Yeah, and actually it's a good point I wanted to raise before. That if you are a voting member, so yes, that is one way to do it, but we would rather have a more official roll call. And if you miss roll call at the start of a meeting, please let us know if you're a voting member. Field representatives, you know, you guys are also supposed to show up to every meeting as well, but particularly for voting members, since it has implications for things like quorum, please let us know if you attend the meeting, miss roll call, and then attendance reflects that you were not here, so that we can make the change as needed. So, anything else for open forum? Yes.
I just have a general event that a lot of people are in here at. From the holiday tech photo shoot on Sunday from 12 to 3, you want to come and dress yourself with any sort of costume that we have. Save your time.
Where is that located?
Oh God.
Where's the location?
In the school. In the Met School. I'm pretty But
what's the okay?
If you go up the Tower Road entrance, it's like right
there. Okay, I assume cats are welcome. Like, okay, it's not just dogs.
Do you have accommodations for dogs? Is it small ones or?
I already have a dog.
Okay. Motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. We are adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.